my mom keeps saying out of the blue for no reason that slips through my filter is like, if I ever get in an accident, I refuse to have donor blood because it has vaccine in it. I'd rather die. I'm like, am I going to let my mom die? Like, or am I just going to lie to her, tell her that, no, they use, you know, the stash of non-vaccinated blood that they have at the hospital. I don't know. So far, our parents are happy as clams. They're living in their little bubble, in their little world. But soon, invariably, somebody's going to get sick. Something's going to happen.
This is the Q-Dropped podcast. Stories of relationships torn apart by QAnon. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that last month I gave a talk at the We Can Reason conference in Calgary. It was called No, It's Not Just a Difference of Opinion, and it told the full story of my parents' descent down the Q rabbit hole and how it affected my brother, myself, and our kids. I was super nervous to give my talk. I'm a bit of an introvert, I'm quiet, I'm way more comfortable one-on-one than in crowds. So when I went up there to speak to a room full of people for the first time in 20 years, my stomach was in knots. I probably spoke too fast. I was fumbling with the mic, my papers, and the slide clicker, and I was probably sweating. But I got through it, and I could tell that the audience appreciated what I was saying. There were a lot of gasps, which I noticed because during all the other talks, the audience noises were limited to giggles and laughs. Not my talk, though. When you're telling people stories of QAnon, you get gasps. Lots of gasps. There were so many questions from the audience, and so many people seemed to get something out of what I said. When I headed for break afterwards, I was hustling to grab a sip of water and take a breath, but as soon as I walked out of the conference room doors, a crowd of people encircled me with questions and comments about how much they got out of my talk. I was so pleasantly surprised. I didn't get any further than right outside the doors to the conference room because so many people wanted to say something. One of them was my guest today. Elaine told me she listened to the podcast, and when I announced that I would be speaking at a conference in Calgary, she couldn't believe it. She came to hear my talk. I was so flattered when she told me that, but what she told me next broke my heart. If you want to listen to my talk at the conference, you can find the link to it on Patreon in the show notes. After I'd finished speaking at the conference, Elaine approached me and told me that my story could very well have been hers. My heart sinks when people tell me that because I just don't wish this on anyone. I told her I was very sorry that she was dealing with QAnon loved ones too, and we started trading war stories. That's when I realized I needed to tell her and her sister's story on our podcast. So without further ado, I give you my fellow Canadians, Emma and Elaine.
Elaine and I were both born in Quebec. We grew up there for part of our lives with our parents. And we moved to the U.S. When we were kids, I would say about nine. I was nine, maybe Elaine was 13, 12.
I was around 12.
We moved down south, mostly Florida, a couple places. Our parents' jobs kind of took us everywhere. We moved around a lot, and that definitely affected how we grew up. And that's also how we learned English, because we didn't live in a town that primarily spoke English.
Both Elaine and Emma had been brought up speaking only French until their parents moved them to the USA. But even though language was a challenge at first, the girls enjoyed the adventure.
We did the first stint in Canada, fairly normal until it was about 12. And then things got a little bit less normal, a little bit more. And some of that was good, actually. It was, more bohemian. Our parents were kind of like a little counterculture, self-employed, had their kind of, everybody thought it was really cool. We thought it was really cool. You know, we had an unusual upbringing, unusual parents, not too crazy, but just they definitely dance the beat of their own drum. Like, our parents are not the types of people that you would find in an office that have ever gone to an office or any, like, that would seem like being on another planet to them. I don't even think they could do it. Whereas Emma and I would go to the office every day, or at least, you know, that's kind of a more traditional path that we both took. And we went to university, both of us, in Montreal.
We were exposed to so many different people and cultures and wild experiences that, you know, I'm grateful for to this day that we got to live and to see. The traveling was definitely eye-opening, because having moved back, you know, I have met people where I live that have never really left ever. Not just the country, but the province. And I find that you get to learn so much and to see so many different cultures and learn different languages. You know, now we speak English, I understand Spanish. I was exposed to different kinds of people, and it was very interesting.
Yeah, our parents are a little bit more kind of rough around the edges. And that's where that counterculture kind of like vibe comes in. So we were crunchy from the beginning, as I'd like to say.
Things were so crunchy that the two sisters would miss out on some of the normal things other kids experienced.
So we would move from place to place. We didn't go to school for a while, and we learned English, like, for those 2 years that our parents just kind of traveled for work. They just kind of brought us along, and that makes for an interesting childhood. But of course, it wasn't very stable. So you'll find that to this day, both Emma and I look for a lot of stability in our lives. And my life specifically is like the anti of my upbringing, which, again, I do want to say wasn't all bad. You know, I got to see like all these monuments, and there's like a Grand Canyon, and I got to learn to speak English.
Eventually, however, as both Emma and Elaine grew into young adults, they would reach the limit of their tolerance for this bohemian lifestyle.
Elaine and I both moved back to be closer to our family after some time.
You know, I'm a mom of two. I'm in my mid-30s. I work a corporate job. University educated. It's kind of boring, to be honest. There's two sides of me now because of that. There's the part of me that wants security and just, you know, predictability and control. And then there's a part of me that wishes I could just like throw my things in a suitcase and just like run off. And you know what I mean? I've always lived with that duality.
I won't get into specifics of the industry where I work, but I definitely also have a corporate job. I kind of made a point once I moved back to Quebec to stay in the same city, and I've been in the same place for 12 years, and that's a first in my life. And I want that stability as well, stability in the partner that I have, in the family that I chose to have. In a sense, my in-laws are like my most stable family, and I adore them. And I get a lot of my stability from that. I really am not down with the whole bohemian moving around place to place.
And she went full opposite. I miss it sometimes, but she's like, nope. I need my Tempur-Pedic. I need my, like, what is it? Like, I need my orthopedic pillow. I need my skincare routine.
I will never move back to the States, especially today. 12 years ago, I made that decision, and I would never go back. I don't regret it one bit.
Emma and Elaine's parents never left the U.S. They remain there to this day.
Because as soon as we moved away, we really only saw them every few years, once a year max. And that's been the routine. And since COVID, it's been several years, for reasons I'm sure you know.
Religion never played a part in Emma and Elaine's lives.
There was a big, big, big break with the Catholic Church in the 80s in Quebec. That's why all of our French curse words are church words, like tabernacles, one and like. So our parents aren't even married. Like, sorry, no, they got married when they were pregnant with me, just at my grandmother's like pleading, because, you know, goodness forbid I'd be born in sin like that. But no, we're full on atheists in our household. So that's another interesting point. They're not religious now. I do have to say they're not religious now.
I asked the sisters what it was like living as atheists in the Bible Belt.
It's the Bible Belt for a reason. I mean, it was very, very much a culture shock when we moved there, having to be around friends going at the dinner table and you have to hold their hands and start praying. So for us, it was definitely a different culture completely. Our parents did not get absorbed in that. Not thankfully, because, you know, and I think we've heard this said in one of your other podcasts, Elaine loved to say that, but if it had been religion, at least we would have known what we were dealing with.
Despite their unusual family dynamics, Emma and Elaine have fond memories of their parents.
One thing that I've always loved about them and that I'll always really remember them fondly by is that they really are very much in love with each other, have always been and will always be. I would say one of my favorite memories is they finally stopped resisting our pleas to get a puppy and we got a puppy.
Oh, no, that's not what happened. I convinced Dad to get a puppy against Mom's wishes. He got me the puppy. And then Mom freaked out for a week, threatening to divorce him, which of course she did not. And then we just had a puppy. But I manipulated Dad and guilted him because we were in a different state at the time. We didn't know anyone. And I made him feel so bad. And he got us a puppy.
It was the best, worst decision he ever made.
He wants a puppy right now. And I'm like, you should get one. He's like, your mother, she'll be so mad. And I'm like, you did it once. Just do it again. She's not going anywhere. I mean, she'll be pissed for a few weeks, but get the puppy.
It wasn't until they had to enroll in an American school that they started to understand their upbringing was a little different.
Our mother and, you know, our parents decided not to vaccinate us. That was the first thing. But when it wasn't a problem for schools in our province when we lived in Canada, it became a problem because there are laws or regulations when you go to public school.
In the States.
Yeah, in the U.S. When we were in Florida, one of the first moments of realization that we were not normal is that we had to lie to claim that we were believers of the holy body religious belief. And us being atheists, it was just mind-boggling for us to have to do this. We had to get some kind of certification signed by...
We went to a priest. We went to like some kind of religious official to get paperwork done. They lied. They saw a priest and the priest was going to give them a paper that said we were believers in the holy... And you have to picture this with a French accent. It makes it even funnier. It's like, holy body, holy body, the holy body. And then we got this paperwork to bring to our school where we were new kids. And they were like, yeah, no vaccines on these kids, but you know, because of God. And they're like, cool, that's fine.
But the fact that we had to get some exemption so that legally we would be allowed to attend public school, that for me was one of the first signs that something was weird. Something was really unusual and the lengths they would go to. Our mother, in the 90s, I'm sure you're aware of this, but there was a paper that came out about, it has since been debunked because the methodology was just so bad, but it tied autism to certain vaccines in early childhood. And that was one of the things that really set her off against vaccines. She was vaccinated when she was a child. I think maybe Elaine had one vaccine, but by the time she heard about that study, she just completely stopped and did not allow us to have vaccines. And since the information came out that the study was flawed in a lot of ways, she's not been very receptive to that or bothered to inform herself.
The paper that Emma is talking about is, of course, the paper written by Andrew Wakefield. We covered who Andrew Wakefield is in episode 6 of season 1 of the Q-Dropped podcast, but I'll give you the condensed version. Andrew Wakefield is a former British doctor known for a fraudulent 1998 study suggesting a link between the MMR vaccine and autism. His methods were unethical, he falsified data, and had undisclosed conflicts of interest. Wakefield's paper, later retracted by The Lancet, caused a significant drop in vaccination rates, leading to a rise in measles cases. In 2010, the UK's General Medical Council struck Wakefield off the medical register, barring him from practicing medicine in the UK. Despite being fully and completely discredited, his claims still contribute to vaccine hesitancy, a significant global health concern, and one that influenced Emma and Elaine's mother.
One of our biggest regrets is that she got me vaccinated in kindergarten because she stopped after that. Yeah, she really regrets vaccinating me because then she knew better.
Did you guys ever get your vaccines up to date then when you realized?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's Emma's story right there.
Yeah, no, we both did. We didn't tell our parents. I don't think you bothered.
It's don't ask, don't tell. If you ask me, I'll tell you, but don't ask me.
I got my first shots. I started at 27. I was very anxious and I nearly passed out just because of all that accumulated fear. You know, it's your first time, you're living it for the first time, and you've had this narrative pumped into you since childhood that these are bad for you, and you have to fight through it and get them because you know better, because you studied in biology and you know that's false. And you just, for me, it was an essential step. I brought my best friend with me to hold my hand because I was very nervous, and I got it done. You know, it was definitely important, but you could just tell in the nurses' faces that, like, yeah, so my parents don't believe in vaccines. They felt kind of bad. And they're like, we're really proud of you for making the right decision. We're so sorry you had to, you know, but you're an adult now and good for you. And I think they're not used to seeing in people so old, but they're seeing it more and more with younger people. So it was a mix of like feeling bad for me and just kind of like not surprised, but you can kind of tell that they're not expecting that story. So yeah, but I've done it, and I've never told them. But if ever we get into some kind of argument at the dinner table one day with the parents, me and Elaine, I'm just going to pull out that card. I'm like, hey, did you know? I'm just going to pull out that card and distract them so we can like start another argument instead. Like I'm waiting for that moment.
Similarly to Emma, I decided to take a trip after university. Then all my friends were going to the travel clinic because there were certain vaccines they had to get to go to, you know, I think it was South America or something like that. And I went in and they're like, okay, what have you got? And I'm like, nothing. Like, give me what you got, because I haven't had anything that I can remember. So they were just like, okay, you're going to need to come here 4 times. So like all my friends only had to go once for whatever they were getting, like yellow fever. And I had to be like, okay, so I'm going to be here every 2 weeks for like the next 6 weeks and or 8 weeks. And thank goodness I had enough time, because I didn't think of that when I bought my plane ticket.
Their mother's vaccine hesitancy went well beyond just her daughter's.
I mean, not wanting me to vaccinate my cat was crazy. I'm like, what do you think is going to happen to him?
Yeah, the pets. She was very concerned our pets would get vaccinated.
Well, she doesn't care. She doesn't want pets. She doesn't even care that I have one. It's the vaccination, it's the act that she absolutely despises. And I'm like, okay.
Like many of our QAnon loved ones, Elaine and Emma's mom was radicalized through the online wellness community, and it happened after a traumatic life event.
Yeah, our father has some serious health issues. He had to have a surgery back when we were about in our early 20s. We already lived on our own, Emma and I, separately back by then. But yeah, that was a marking point pre-COVID around YouTube time, where because he got sick, and because they're so madly in love and codependent, it was like, oh, I need to keep him alive now. So the wellness stuff just kept coming. There was not enough wellness YouTubes and stuff. And so she would say this all the time. She'd be like, oh, if I would have known, I would have never let you eat this or that. And that was the first segment of the conspiracy, you know, wellness piece, which was kind of manageable, that skyrocketed. It was like they could not eat with. And I think that's, you may have mentioned this, Courtney, or one of your guests, like they can't eat with anyone. They can't eat in restaurants. She has to make everything at home. It all has to be from Whole Foods. It all has to be organic. There's a lot of even organic stuff. And this has been progressively and progressively worse. And to now they make their own water. Like they can't have water anywhere but their home. They will travel with jugs of water like the apocalypse is coming.
I feel like there's human beings really try to rationalize why things happen to them. Even if it's completely unexplainable, we try so hard to find a culprit that we can control because the situation feels really uncontrollable. And that's exactly what happened when our father got sick. He had to have heart surgery, and it was a very real moment where he realized that there were odds that he would not make it, and he had to make real plans. And that was the first time in his life where he realized that, you know, he's not immortal. He's, you know,
it was not just physical. It was very psychological for him. He felt very vulnerable, very hurt by life, very like to him, it was just this completely out of left field blindside as a virile man, right? Like in a man of his, at the time in his early 50s. And to him, it was kind of unacceptable. And it took him a long time to just accept that he was, you know, that things happened, that he had to get that kind of intervention, that he could have died. He was fighting it the whole way. And of course, I should mention my parents don't have healthcare in the US. So he wasn't feeling well, and he happened to be with me in Canada. And I had to convince him to go to the doctor. I was all by myself with him, which that's probably a good thing. So if he were with my mother, she probably would not have been okay with him going into the doctor. They're very anti-doctor.
She would have taken him to a naturopath, by the way.
Yeah, so we're in Canada together. He's moving me to Canada. That's when I came back to go to university. And he's saying he has chest pains, he's not feeling well. And just to be clear, our parents never go to the dentist. They never go to the doctor. And even if they wanted, they don't do checkups. Even if they wanted to, they're in the States and they're there with no status, no insurance. They're self-employed. So they never, we never went to the doctor. I'm just grateful we never needed medical attention because that was never an option unless there was something like, oh, she broke her foot. Okay. But we never had any reason to go to the doctor. But so they're against that financially and like ideologically, unless something like a broken leg or something. So anyways, so they saw my dad and they were like, you need surgery. Like, ASAP, you're staying here. And he was so shocked by that and unwilling to accept it. I had to convince him to stay there. And it was a very real moment because I think I was about 22. And I was like, okay, now I need to manage my father. I need to like convince him to stay put. And of course, then I had to work on my mom. I mean, I've had to kind of parent them in many ways. But and then we brought my mom up. We installed them at a relative's house for 2 months for his recovery. And then, yeah, the wellness stuff. I mean, to her credit, like she was going to nurse him and fix him. She was going to fix them. And then they had this narrative that, oh, without eating crap food and, you know, without restaurants, if my dad didn't go to the restaurant so much, this would have never happened. So it really began the everything my dad ingests has to be prepared by my mom, including water. She gives them this nondescript battery of supplements and potions and dusts and whatever, and has ever since.
Elaine and Emma's mom has also found other therapies for their father.
Have you heard of chelation? Chelation? I don't know what it's called.
It's to remove some kind of heavy metals from the blood. She's been recommending our dad to take these treatments instead of seeking treatment.
It's like a dialysis. She sends my dad to like chelation dialysis every like X number of weeks. It's frequent. It's at least once a month. Since he denied medical treatment, that's where he goes instead, which he claims has removed all the problems and he's feeling great. But he goes to literal dialysis. I don't know what they put back in his blood and what they're filtering out, but he goes to literal dialysis once a month. I don't know how much that costs out of pocket because it's not a medically, it's an alternative treatment, but how many thousands of dollars are spent there? I have no idea.
It's also not a known treatment for heart disease.
Chelation therapy is a legitimate medical procedure that involves the administration of chelating agents to remove heavy metals from the body. The term chelate comes from a Greek word meaning claw, reflecting the way these agents grab onto ions of heavy metals. Chelation therapy is used by medical professionals in very specific circumstances, such as treating heavy metal poisoning. Chelating agents bind to metals like lead, mercury, copper, iron, arsenic, aluminum, and calcium, and once bound, are excreted from the body primarily through the kidneys. However, chelation therapy has been promoted as a treatment for conditions like heart disease and autism without sufficient scientific evidence to support these uses. The procedure can have very serious side effects, including kidney damage, irregular heartbeat, and in some cases, death. It is absolutely crucial for chelation therapy to be administered under medical supervision and only for approved and appropriate uses. But we're talking about the wellness community, where the advice of doctors is scoffed at and internet memes inform health choices. Emma and Elaine's mom would immerse herself in this culture.
So for a long time, it was vegetarian, vegan, and then it was okay to have meat, but it was organic. So we can't really keep track. And it's all bought from special places that are hours away from where they live. And our food can't be close to their food. And a big annoyance whenever we're around each other is that she'll be upset that we own food. She'll be like, oh, you have milk in your fridge. That's outrageous. Milk is so bad for you. And I'm like, well, I drink milk in my coffee and I need my coffee because you better believe. So I'm going to have milk and then you do you. I'm going to take you to the health store. You're going to spend $800 for a week, whatever you got to do, lady, but I don't touch my stuff. And so she'll sneakily try to sneak her food into, oh, well, I'll make dinner. Oh, you know, $10 chicken breast for everyone. Like, and it's very like loving, but it's also exhausting, as you know. It's like, I just want to have I just want to eat a toast with peanut butter, like that you didn't make from scratch. And so that's kind of been the negotiation. It's like, you do you, we'll do us. But whenever they visit, it's like the water distiller, the trips to Whole Foods every day. She has to stay home all day to make this food and to put it all into glass jars.
Because she doesn't believe in contact with plastics and everything has to be glass, ceramics.
It's so time consuming. It's so expensive. It's a full-time job. She would wake us up to make her own almond milk at 6 a.m. with like a food processor. Okay, am I waking you? Like, yes, you are. You needed almond milk right now from your own almonds that you bought at a special store that have been soaking overnight? Okay.
Our cousin went over to see them in Florida and she went and got her groceries. I'm sorry, I can't say this without cracking up. She went and got her groceries and then she put her regular bananas next to our mother's organic bananas and they cannot touch because of GMOs. I'm like, because for her, GMO is just, it's a title, it's a name. She doesn't understand the mechanics behind like I do. And I tried to explain it to her once. She does not want to understand. She's not willing to, but they could not be in contact.
Their mother became so obsessed with health and wellness, she would impose on everyone around her.
She searched through my bag once and found my medication because they're very anti-mental health. Like this is, like maybe Scientology would have been a good fit for them. So at the time, I was only on Synthroid, which is your most banal, like hypothyroid condition. Like I've been on Synthroid since my early 20s. And it's like the kind of thing you take till you die. Like it's like a vitamin now to me. Like it's not a big deal. And then she started buying me, and this is the thing, they'll buy us like all these things. She started loading me up with like castor oil and like the list, and she'll go on rants like for 20 minutes about, oh, well, oregano oil, castor oil. And she Googles everything, right? So it's all from Google, just spit verbatim. So a lot of medical advice to our grandparents, which scares us. She tried to convince our grandparents not to get vaccines. And like, she had a cure for me. And it's just like, oh, I was just cleaning the bathroom and I just happened to see it. And I just happened to see your bottle. But of course she was like, oh, like, oh my God, like I'm going to fix this and I need to address this. And I'm just like, that is so invasive that you look through my shit. It's so weird. Thank God she doesn't see my meds now.
Emma and Elaine's mom wouldn't stop with just family.
What's unfortunate is I've heard them comment about like their friend's cancer diagnosis. People's medical conditions should just not be like, they don't ask her. She imposes. She has to. She's compulsive. She has to tell them, oh, I will cure you with these oils. It's like, let them get their treatment and live.
It's like a religious fanatic. Like her mother's of that generation where, you know, the Virgin Mary and like you need to pray to this and do that. And you know, they're old people, our grandparents were like, and they're not that pushy about it, but my mom reminds me of her mom, except for religion, it's all this wellness stuff. And it's just compulsive and like repetitive and repetitive and repetitive. It's a monologue. You're not even in that conversation.
It's so bad that both Emma and Elaine avoid talking to their mother about anything related to health at all.
Oh, this is sad, actually. I didn't tell her my daughter was in the hospital with RSV. I only told my in-laws. I mean, she was fine, but like for 24 hours, my daughter needed medical support. She was unresponsive because the RSV beat her up so bad this last Christmas. And it scared me because it's the first time I've taken my child to the hospital. You know, everything else, you know, they're always sick with something or other and it's always stressful. But like when you know you need to go to the hospital, when you're trying to shake your child awake and they won't wake up, like that's terrifying. I've only been doing this for a few years, but I couldn't tell her. Or I kept it so surface. Like I couldn't talk to my mom about my mothering experience with my child. Like I can't. That's it. Or I can't tell her about my own things because then it's like unwarranted advice or fear or. She'll repeat it every time I talk to her for the next month. She's like, oh, well, now I know this and this is what you should have done. And I'm just like, I don't, just be a person that listens to my experience. I don't need you to do or say anything.
Their parents' beliefs also extended far beyond just health and wellness.
Our parents used to be very politically left-leaning, and since they've been in Florida with that echo chamber and just watching Fox all day, what surprised me the most is they became really more and more Republican. And in 2016, when Trump got elected, I was very surprised they were quite supportive.
Oh, so supportive. They were in the happy party. My mom would call me to tell me how great a job Trump did in Puerto Rico. I remember being in the grocery store, like, just my eyes like, okay.
But then when they got into the whole election denial, that really was disappointing. Like, they got wrapped up in that. They were into the belief that Trump was the rightfully elected person. And it's a very common Q thing, I believe, that the whole Republican leaning, Trump supporting election denial, that was just, it was their own little world, their political echo chamber. And they've never been that political in our youth. And now as adults, they've become more into it. And it's new and sort of surprising. And thankfully, because they're not considered citizens, they don't have the right to vote where they live. So they're not going to contribute to that politically speaking. They don't go to rallies, as far as I know.
No, because they'd have to bring their own water. You can't. This is the one thing. She can't leave her house because that's where all the glass jars with things are. She can't go anywhere. No, but Courtney, it's no joke. Like, she is chained to her home. She can't go anywhere.
It's very isolating. It's a very small world.
They're also avid believers in chemtrails.
We took her to Mexico. She does drink wine. Has to be organic. But like the wine... like making a joke, this is one of my jokes. I'm like, just get her liquored up on organic wine and she'll calm the hell down. Because there's anxiety here, right? This is an anxiety disease. Our mother probably has generalized anxiety disorder. Like, we try to be compassionate. Like, this doesn't just happen. She can't help it. We both have anxiety and we treat it. Like, Emma and I, we get it. Anyways, all that to say, we took her to Mexico and we just lied to her constantly. We're like, yeah, well, everything's organic in Mexico. Like, they don't have the same bad laws as the US and Canada. Mexico is... it's probably covered in pesticides. Like, I don't know. But we were like, everything's organic here.
We import all our produce from Mexico.
I know. But she believed us, right? Because she's fairly gullible, which is the problem. So we were like, oh, yeah. And like, so, and we kept her liquored up. And so she was just kind of happy, buzzing on vacation, happy to see her daughters, having a good time. This was right before I got pregnant. And she'd be like, oh, isn't it nice to see real Klaus? Just like a little drunk, just kind of like walking around Mexico, just... and so my husband and I are always like, oh, isn't that nice? Real clouds. You don't see them anymore.
It's all very frustrating for the sisters.
It's so anti-science, all of it. She's very fearful of everything that could potentially be a hazard.
But she's obsessed with the internet. So she's like, oh, well, I'm on my phone all day, but I'm going to hold it away from my head. And then the Wi-Fi is on all day, but if we turn it off at night, it's fine. I'm like, what? The dissonance is real.
When we speak to our parents on the phone, it has to be on speaker. They are unwilling to hold it near their head. So there's always a lot of echo. It's hard to hear them. It's an already unpleasant conversation. It makes it even more unpleasant. Now her new thing is buying things that will allow them to live their lifestyle without electricity. For some reason, they have some kind of belief that something about civilization collapse.
One day I actually said, do you believe in flat earth? And she looked at me and she said, that is ridiculous. So that's where she draws the line. That made me laugh so much.
Like so many others, their right-wing conspiracy theories would come with bigotry.
They've always been very LGBT friendly for back in the day. It was just my mom and her gay men, like, until she met my dad. Like, she was by their bedside in the 80s AIDS crisis. Like, I met a lot of them when I was young. I think you'd mentioned this before, but I don't think she would say she's anti-LGBT, but I'm hearing this rhetoric right around, oh, the bathrooms and the trans, and they're mutilating our kids. And I'm like, they're teaching your kids that you're not a girl and not a boy in every school. They're forcing the kids to be trans. I'm like, what? Like, it's just so blown out of proportion. I'm like, no one's doing that. Like, at best you get trans people exist, maybe. No one's telling your kid, like, you're not a boy and you're not a girl. Like, no one's doing that. No one. And she keeps telling me stuff about that. Like, oh, they're not going to let them be girls. Your girls are not going to be girls. They're like, that's so sad. The gender stuff freaks her out. But that means you're kind of anti-trans. It scares me. What if one of my kids is trans?
When the pandemic happened, you might already be able to imagine how Emma and Elaine's parents responded.
Full-blown pew. Like, honestly, I think like full pandemic. It's fascism, it's government control. They're very anti-government as well, which is hilarious in a way. It was full, like, vaccines are toxic, they're trying to poison you, you're gonna be sterile. That was another fun thing. You're gonna be sick in 2 years, right? The 2 years and 6 years, 8 years. I don't know when we're gonna die from these vaccines, but I'm waiting on it. It's a regular cold, it's no big deal. She just kept repeating, like, it's no big deal, like, it's no big deal, and everyone's just fine. It's just fine. My dad had it. And she just had a whole spiel about, oh, it was totally fine. It was like a couple of days and then he's totally back. He's totally fine.
It was a pretty bad flu. He was down for a couple of days and he was, he had a lot of fever and he made it out thankfully, but with his condition, it could have gone downhill.
Well, that's what I mean. I was more worried before he had it, because before he had it, I was like, what if he has it and he's one of those that has serious complications? So by the time he had it and it was fairly manageable, I'm like, okay, great. At least I know that for him, as for many of us, it's not a big deal, but it could have been. And that's always the thing with everything they're doing. You've always been healthy. You've always been attractive and healthy and privileged. So you've never had to have real worries. And you're deciding that nobody should get a vaccine because you think you don't need it. And maybe they didn't need it. But that's not the reality of the world. A lot of people do need it because a lot of people have died, right? And so in our minds, we didn't know our parents weren't going to be some of those who died from it. So we had to wait till it happens, be like, okay, in your case, your body fought it off. Good for you.
Both Emma and Elaine were happy to have the opportunity to get vaccinated against COVID-19, but their parents didn't like that.
It's when they were like begging me to reconsider my vaccine take, send me these videos from Germany and from France, and because they have access to European media because they speak different languages. So I get to have the wellness culture across the continents as well. They were saying, oh, if you watch this one video, it was all over email, we'll never bring it up again. And I had to send them a stern email that I was like, I watch it and you need to stop this. And if you do it ever again, like, we will no longer be so patient with you. Like, you're not going to see my kids. So if you want to see them, you need to stop right now. And I said, I need to warn you that if Emma ever has kids, she's going to be less patient than I am with you. So watch your back.
The pandemic was clearly causing a rift in the family.
They didn't come during COVID because of all the mask mandates and, you know, the Q-tip gets in your brain and kills you and government control and Canada's a fascist state. What was it, Emma? What is it about Canada that they love to say?
A dictatorship?
Dictatorship. Yes. Canada's a dictatorship.
A dictatorship with a minority government.
Yeah. Oh, I don't even think they know that far. And they were never into politics to begin with, right? They're definitely like up there with Trump and conservative values and the trans. Oh my God, the trans kids, although I don't think they could speak to it. Somehow anti-Planned Parenthood. I'm like, where did this come from? Because one of the last arguments I had with my mom was like, you're upset with Planned Parenthood? Why? Like, how? And she's like, oh, you know, they're taking fetuses and making stem cells. I'm like, what? Okay, no. You're a liberal woman from Quebec. Like, how? How did this happen? You don't want us to get pap tests anymore? Like, what is the issue here? They're supposed to come this summer. I don't know if I told you this. This is kind of the crux of what makes me so upset is they're going to meet their 2-year-old granddaughter they've never met that was born in 2021. I'm resentful about that. I'll be honest. I think that to me is the biggest F you. Not, I know that's not how they mean it. To them, they have good reasons, but that's where I'm like, okay, I see how this is going to be. I see what your priorities are.
Why haven't they met?
Well, she's 2 now. So, well, first, of course, there was the travel restrictions. So that was their thing. The vaccine mandate, okay. But then it was also the masks. We're not getting vaccinated. Absolutely not. But also, if they ask for masks, we're not flying. I'm like, really? You can't wear a cloth over your face to come see me?
It was mostly the tests.
Right. And the quarantine. They refused to quarantine in any way. Their freedom, their rights, you know.
But our mother thought that the test contained some kind of contaminant.
It gives you COVID somehow.
Yeah, she changed her story a lot around why the tests were bad.
It gets in your brain.
And then I tried to argue some anatomical facts about, you know, the brain being encapsulated by bone and there's protection there. There's something that for me was just very bothersome is that a flagrant disregard for just common basic facts. Like you present something that is unquestionably true. And there is a way to rationalize around so that their argument that they hold on to so dearly stays true in their mind because you cannot destroy that reality for them. They have to find a way to still hold on to that no matter what. And despite, you know, being faced with actual, real, undeniable physical facts, there's nothing you can do, nothing you can say, nothing you can show. And that's for me why I think this is more akin to a mental virus. I've compared it more to that and having studied what I studied. And for me, I kind of make that analogy. I make that distinction just because I see it more as a mind disease. Like it's consumed them and there's nothing that I can do to like bring her back. And you know, throughout our retelling of these events, these stories, these memories, you'll probably see that our mother is mostly the person that's affected by this. Our father kind of follows along. I think he's more a rational mind, but he loves her so much and wants to be by her side and support her and can't imagine a life without her, that he has to support her through this. But he knows better. And that's a little bit why it's more upsetting, that him knowing better and still not choosing to himself, despite not viscerally holding on to these beliefs, he still won't cross the border, get tested, and meet his granddaughter himself if his wife doesn't want to go. Just for us, it's really mind-blowing for us to see that this is where their priorities were.
Despite this growing rift, the sisters have committed to seeing their parents soon.
So this summer is the big meeting. For me, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. We haven't seen them in 4 years in person. Summer 2019 was the very last time. So I'm kind of almost not looking forward to it, because I've kind of had that separation, so that it hurts less if you're not too attached. And so now having to bring them back in my life, I'm just not looking forward to it. But we have to. We can't fully cut them off yet. We're not at that point.
And we're each going to see them in separate settings because we live in different provinces, and I'm just going to throw my kids at them. Like, that's my buffer. And my husband as well, they're a little bit more, they leave him alone more than me. Like, if he's around, they're not as open. They've already met my in-laws, and my in-laws are super polite. But once they've let it out very diplomatically that they didn't understand how my parents could not meet, because my in-laws are so involved with our kids. My mother-in-law spent like months and months and months with us to help us during COVID. And it's like, they don't understand a world where grandparents would want to have a relationship with their grandkids. They're the only grandkids, because there's only the two of us, right? We don't have any other siblings. Emma's child-free. And it's like, well, I don't know. I guess long-term, I'm like, you're making your world so small. And we know this is affecting my father, because he would love to be part. He would love to, I'll just say, like, be a grandpa. Like, all grandparents, you know, are obsessed with, I don't know how I would say this. This is where they got to in life. They have two adult daughters. They have grandchildren. Like, you're choosing to exclude yourself from that. We would welcome that. And they've just made it impossible. They've made their world so small. And a lot of people are kind of turned off by them and just kind of polite. So they've like ruined friendships. And I think there's family members who won't speak to them. And so this just kind of bonds them to each other even more, but not in a good way. You know, like, we wish my father would kind of assert himself and say, okay, well, I'm going to go visit them, or I'm going to do this, or I don't agree, but I don't think he's willing. We would expect better from him. And that's where that hurts so much. Because when someone's ideologically, like, just so invested, like, in this delusion, I'm like, you believe this, like, as much as my reality. Like, there's nothing I can do. Like, I get that. But we know he can see kind of both sides and is choosing to live in the delusion. And that's why it's hurtful. Because we know he wants to see us. We know he doesn't have the same convictions. We know he's unhappy with all that negativity and that restriction and those YouTube videos constantly all day.
The sisters worry about the mental health and happiness of their parents.
My dad luckily has, like, he's very, like, well-renowned in this field, and he sees people every day, thank God. But then he goes home to that, and it's just like, I don't know. I think him having an outside world helps, but for my mother, she has completely, like, locked herself into this, making food all day, listening to podcasts, harassing my dad about all this stuff. Listen to this one.
They also worry about their parents' future.
We are concerned that they're not going to have any money, like, by the time we look into their affairs, if we ever need to. Not that we want any money for ourselves, God no, but they have their own business. Do they have enough money to retire? Probably not. Could they get sick tomorrow in the States with no healthcare? Yes. What happens, like, when I have to go, as the eldest daughter with anxiety, I have to go deal with that. Which one of them am I bringing back with me? Do I have to fight with them? Where are all their things? Where is all their money? We talk about that all the time. Me and Emma, we're like, one day I'm going to have to handle them like a parent. And I am concerned about what I'm going to find.
They find it especially concerning to think about how their mother will respond to any future health problems they may face.
My mom keeps saying, out of the blue for no reason, that slips through my filter, is like, if I ever get in an accident, I refuse to have donor blood because it has vaccine in it. I'd rather die. I'm like, am I going to let my mom die? Like, or am I just going to lie to her and tell her that, no, they use, you know, the stash of non-vaccinated blood that they have at the hospital? I don't know. So that these are things that were... So far, our parents are happy as clams. They're living in their little bubble, in their little world. But soon, invariably, somebody's going to get sick. Something's going to happen. Where's all their money going? What are they doing? I don't know. So we're pretty concerned about that. Like, I'm willing to help them. I love them. But they might not let me help them. And I might have to watch from afar. You know, they will choose to forego treatment. My dad has already done it. He's walked out of a hospital after a treatment plan was given to him. And he said, I don't want to do this.
Emma and Elaine often think about what a struggle it might be to move their parents closer as they age and need more care.
We still love them. And, you know, we are grateful they are our parents. And like, I'm not going to let them like leave them alone in Florida and hope for the best. I would bring them back up here. I would settle them here. I would consolidate their money, you know, do whatever I have to do. But if they're fighting me, I legally can't force them. Or let's say it's my mom, worst case scenario. I can't legally force her to move here. I can't make her eat what she doesn't want to eat. How am I going to create the like, little compound situation she has going on? I can't turn off her internet. Maybe the kids will help a little bit, like kind of give her something else to think about. But as it stands now, that's her 24 hours a day. Like, I don't know how to give her a life outside of that. Like, I think she'll fight me tooth and nail to stay in her home and to manage her own affairs, which from a generational perspective, she's never dealt with any of the money of our family. Like, she has no idea how to go to the bank and sign paperwork. You know what I mean? So we're going to have to deal with that. And tomorrow I can learn my dad is sick. Because I guess because he had a heart condition years ago, we always expected it to be him, but anything could happen. We know that we're going to have no say in the medical treatment, that it will most likely be a misinformed natural remedy, and that we will have no say over it, and that we'll have to watch that happen. And that's where the grief comes in. I'm fully ready for that. I'm fully ready to hear, I am sick, I'm not seeking medical advice, or if I have, I'm not following it, and this is my choice. Because they've asked me to respect their choices before, and I don't know about you, but when I got that email that asked me to do that, I did it. I was in therapy at the time and I was like, I fully accept it. And I do now, but it's sad. It's a big detachment.
The sisters also worry about the extent to which their parents' extremism might put them in physical danger.
One of the other things that kind of worries me is they're currently in a place where they're in an echo chamber. There aren't a lot of people who believe the way they do, but with things becoming increasingly more and more volatile in the US, I feel like they are going to come up to circumstances where they'll clash against other people and that it could potentially one day become violent. They're very outspoken about what they believe in. They share it freely. They might come across somebody who is very against that, but like viscerally against that will want to, you know, you get in an argument with someone and it could go downhill. I mean, maybe it's my irrational fear. It's more likely that it's going to be something related to their health. But I just feel like because they're so extreme, there are potential clashes, especially if they go outside of their bubble. So it's still related to the fear for their physical safety. But, you know, I think they're generally nice enough people that they don't get into arguments with other people. But you never know if you meet somebody who's just a violent person and really hates what you stand for. And you happen to share a belief so extreme that it could cause a lot of frictions and potential violence or harm.
Emma and Elaine think that QAnon and related conspiracy theories pose a significant threat to our society. And they worry about what this means for the future.
That they're going to be elected to office and start making rules that's going to start impacting real people. It's one thing to share your beliefs, to have your beliefs. It's one thing to impose them to other people.
I like to think we're safe in Canada, right, Courtney and John? It's like, oh yeah, like we're okay here. But yeah, since Roe v. Wade, I'm just really scared. Like, I'm scared for women. I'm scared to raise women. I have two daughters. I'm scared of their, you know, bodily autonomy being compromised. I'm scared of violence against them.
The sisters faced another hardship that's pretty common amongst our interviewees.
One of the things that I want to add to that is that, and this might be common with a lot of people going through the same situation, is that we've grieved our parents while they were still alive. We've had that discussion about their death, about the upcoming struggle we're going to have if something happens to them. And we've come to terms with that. We had to do that. And a lot of people, grief hits the most when the parent or the person that they love passes or something happens to them. It's been an ongoing process of acceptance that we have lost the people that we have once really been close to and loved very much. We still love them, but they're not the same people. And speaking of legalities, Elaine and I have made decisions that should something happen to us, our parents are not allowed to be involved in any kind of medical decisions.
Or my kids, that I've had to put that in my will, that I don't want my parents to have anything to do with like my kids beyond just a social relationship, any kind of ownership over where they live. That's all of my in-laws. That's all my sister and my sisters-in-law. Like, I made it explicit. I've had to, because I can't have that. And it sucks to say.
The two sisters have different approaches to handling their parents' conspiracy talk.
I've worked so hard to train her that whenever she brings this up, I'm like, look, the kids, look at them. That's my out. That's how I still get to talk to them. It's like, oh, right. Oh, the kids. Oh, I have to go put the baby to bed. I gotta go. Thank you. Good chat. Bye. Emma's less patient. She just goes, no, thank you. Click. We have two very different approaches. She studied biology, so she's kind of like, she can't be bothered to hear it. Whereas I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I don't know. I just play dumb. And it's not because I'm nice. It's because I don't have the stamina to get involved and to like argue or even to listen. But Emma will be like, that's absolutely and unequivocally false. I'm hanging up now. Click.
They will no longer argue with their parents.
If I really care about you and I really like want to confront you, it's because like if I'm going to argue with you, it means I love you and I really care. If I'm done arguing with you, it means I'm detaching. It means I'm just like, good luck out there. But for our parents, not that we don't love them, but it's like that ship has sailed. Like, I will agree with anything you say on the phone. Like, whatever. Sure.
Elaine uses humor to manage how she feels about her parents.
As we talk about how this affects us now, because like with my friends and, you know, people in my life, it's a joke. Like, I have bits about my parents, like, how are you crazy parents? Like, oh, they're crunchy, they're fine. But the truth is, when Emma and I were talking, it's like, this affects us. And that's something that I haven't been willing to kind of really feel. And through your podcast, I have like been kind of allowed myself to be mad about it from like how it affects me. Because it's one thing to laugh at them or to be like, oh, this is silly. But it has really taken things from us. And that's kind of why I wanted to talk to you today. Because like, I haven't really honored that for myself. I haven't really been allowed myself to. I've been so busy like dodging and like kind of managing and running my own life that I haven't taken a moment to say, actually, you know, this is upsetting to me. You're doing something to me and you're disrespecting me. And I'm angry about it. And it's not something I would tell them because, again, they would get very defensive and I don't want to enter that. Beyond the humor and the sarcasm, it's hard for me to admit, like, I am hurt by this.
The sisters are ready to cut ties if need be.
And for me, I think I'm really prepared to cut them off if I need to, fully. I mean, I've gotten very low contact, and they've noticed, whereas Elaine, you know, she has the kids to talk to them about and to keep in contact, and it's a good reason to keep them as much in their lives, even though not physically present, as possible. But I think we've learned over time that no intervention is possible. I unfortunately learned that the hard way. When you're in it daily, you don't notice the transition over time. It's kind of like how did you put it, Elaine? A frog in boiling water.
That analogy I overuse. Yeah.
But for our father, at some point, I think in 2015, when I went to visit them and I stayed in their house a couple of days, it was very flagrant.
Oh, you broke down. I remember talking to you on the phone, trying to talk you off the ledge. You were going to fly out immediately. I remember that.
Whereas for my dad, it was just a normal progression and he didn't see that. And one time we had a one-on-one. We went to go see a movie. We went to do an activity.
Because he leaves the house.
Yeah, he leaves the house. He has popcorn occasionally. He hides stuff from mom, you know, as much as possible. So I tried to have a discussion with them. Unfortunately, it turned into a bit of a confrontation about our mother's behavior and how it was not normal to get rid of a microwave because waves were harmful, because she just hurt. I tried to make him understand that her beliefs against waves and GMOs. And
yeah, you confronted him, like you went in there.
I tried to make him understand that it was not rational and it made no sense scientifically, because by then I believe I was in my undergrad. I wasn't quite finished yet, but I understood enough to be able to explain to him, and he would not accept it. He was just unwilling to have his reality shattered, and he got very defensive and snapped at me, and he got into a full-blown argument. And we got home, and I went into my guest room, and I didn't leave for 24 hours. I was like, I cannot see these people. I can't be with them. I need to leave. And eventually it died down, but that whole confrontation as an adult, for me, it really hit me that there was no amount of rationale, no amount of confrontation that's gonna, if anything, was more and more detrimental to the relationship that I had with my parents.
Today, both sisters prioritize the health and well-being of Elaine's kids.
And my in-laws are living saints. Like, I married the Brady Bunch, and probably on purpose. And it's just wild to see how much they're enjoying their relationship with me and my kids, who are, I mean, the cutest age, the most tiring age, but the cutest, they're 2 and 4. My parents, I've met them twice. They don't know them. They don't have a relationship with my kids. They came up when my older daughter was born, and then we went to see them in Florida once when she was 11 months, and that's it. So as of right now, they don't know them. They've seen them on Zoom and they say hello, but that's about it. And I can't even imagine them being alive in 10 years and having a relationship with my kids. Not that I don't want that, but I would love that. I hope I have that. But I, with everything we've lived so far, I would be pleasantly surprised if I could say my kids have a relationship with their grandparents.
One of the things that we were concerned about regarding Elaine's kids is, and we had a serious discussion about that, whether or not we would allow them unsupervised time.
This one hurts.
Yeah, because we were very concerned of our mother's compulsivity to impose her will and her treatment. So we don't know what she would feed the kids, what she would give them.
Would she give my child Tylenol if I wasn't there and she had a 40s fever or like a 104?
No, she doesn't believe in that. She would give her some strange oils.
Will you give her to eat what I ask you to give her to eat? If she's sick, will you give her Tylenol? Will you take her to the hospital? Like, I can't trust that. I'm going on a trip soon, and my in-laws are so young and healthy enough to cover for us. So for the first time in 5 years, post-kids, post-pandemic, my husband and I are going to take a romantic vacation, just the two of us. I'm leaving my kids with my in-laws, who I trust 1,000% in their reasoning and their ability. They know us. They've spent so much time with us. They've lived with us for months at a time. I'm leaving my kids with them. And my in-laws are getting older too, so will I get to do that again? I don't know, which is why we're jumping on the chance. But I know I can't do that with my parents. If I were gone tomorrow, I would be more than happy for my in-laws to take care of my kids. I would trust them 100%. And I can't say that with my parents as they are now, but also having grown up with them.
Emma and Elaine have tried to figure out what their mother gets out of all of this.
For my mom, it's soothing anxiety that's pre-existing. I think when you have anxiety, you look for reasons why you're so anxious. And then the world, YouTube, is more than happy to let you know why. You know, and she's very much into this Q adjacent, like world elites and government collapse and stuff like that. So I think she's just validating her anxiety, and it's a bottomless well. So anything that's out there that validates, yeah, you should be anxious because things are out to get you. The food is poison. The vaccines are poison. They're trying to control you. You can't trust the government. You can't trust the hospitals. You can't trust the air you breathe. You can't trust the clouds.
I think it makes her feel better to know things that other people don't. It makes her feel superior in some sense.
We all have priorities, right? We all have our values in a priority order. And we've seen time and time again that she'll prioritize her beliefs and soothing her anxiety. The idea that she's keeping my dad alive, that if he went away 2 weeks without her, he would die or something. And then we come last. That's just how it is. But luckily, we've made our lives so that we don't need her. That's sad, right? My kids, I would protect them against my parents 3 times as hard as I would protect myself. Like you said in your talk, and I think that woke me up a little bit. There's a values thing there. Like, where do you draw the line with what's right and wrong? And for me, I think I've just been trying to protect myself from the impact by creating boundaries. But yeah, when do you look at them and say, these beliefs are dangerous, like they're toxic? So you really kind of shook me out of my comfort zone around, oh, they're just crazy. We'll just work around them. And now I'm just kind of like, oh, like, should I be more affirming of myself and my values and draw the line and actually look at them and be like, this is wrong, like on a moral framework?
Would you consider playing this episode for them when it comes out?
Oh, no.
No. I'll be honest with you. When I first started listening to your podcast, I told my dad, hey, if you ever want a different perspective, you should listen to this. So I don't know if he listened or is listening. Maybe secretly I would love for him to listen. I don't want my mom to hear because she can't, it can't get through and it would hurt her so much. And then she might cut contact with us, to be honest. By the way, for your listeners, they can't vote. So just so you know, a green card means you can't vote. So that's one thing.
Thank you so much to Elaine and Emma for sitting down with me and telling me their story. We hope that your visit with your parents goes off without a hitch. Also, many thanks to our patrons, without whom we could not do this podcast. Sign up to support us on Patreon at the link in the show notes, and you'll get access to ad-free episodes, patron-only episodes, and bonus material. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform to be notified when our next episode goes live. Thanks for listening.